Hello, Mystery Creators. Hope you're doing well during these really difficult times. We really appreciate you guys turning to us as some sort of distraction. With that being said, let's give you what you're looking for. A welcome distraction from the harsh realities that are out there. Horrible pandemic. There I go. I am not taking your mind off of it. I apologize. So here it is. This is a Mystery Crate. Every week, it's a different thing. One week, you can have Billy and his incredible cast of characters breaking down MTV's The Challenge. The next week, you can have an insightful interview. The following week, you can have an interview with Hercules Gomez previewing the MLS soccer season. You just have no idea what you're going to get. And sometimes we give you combo episodes where you get multiple segments within one episode, and that's what this is this week. The first thing you're going to hear on the podcast today is Dan Lebatard interviewing an algorithmic professor from the University of Texas. You all know by listening to the Dan Lebatard Show with Stu Gotts that Dan is a huge fan of advanced metrics. And obviously, with sports changing a little bit because of the pandemic, we're not really getting a postseason or regular season finish in the NBA that we would have sort of anticipated. So we found this article on this high-powered supercomputer that ran simulations on the NBA season to give you, the listener, some satisfaction in knowing how the NBA season would have ended. So we're going to talk to Dr. Garva Yules from the University of Texas, and he's going to let us know what would have happened in the NBA this season had there not been a suspension of play. Also, coming up later in this podcast, Greg and Chris Cody talk to Tim Kirkchin and Tim Kirkchin's son, Jeff Kirkchin, who just so happens to be a country music DJ out in Las Vegas. Interesting story. So they're going to talk about their love for baseball. It's going to be a really cool episode. But first up, Dr. Garva Yules from the University of Texas running his MBA simulation. This is very interesting. Here he is, Dr. Garva Yules on the Mystery Crate.
All right. So as you know, we've all been content starved here in the sports business. We've had very unsatisfying ends to seasons and no endings at all. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to check in here with a simulation model, an advanced simulation model. The Frontera computer is the fifth largest supercomputer in the world, and a team of programmers use it for a variety of different things. And Dr. Garva Yules is a professor of algorithmic modeling at the University of Texas. That's where the Frontera computer is located. And I don't know, Dr. Yules, thank you for joining us. I don't know if you're a sports fan or not, but can you just explain to us the power of this computer? What are we talking about in terms of a predictive model for an NBA season? How accurate is this thing and how advanced is it?
Well, Dan, thank you for for having me on. The Frontera supercomputer, it's got a peak performance of 23.5 petaflops on HBL, and it's been achieving about 83 to 86% accuracy in weather, genomic and quantum physics, predictive modeling. Recently, those numbers reached a high of 94%, give or take, with some basic dynamics such as moisture distribution and temperate flow patterns, I mean, just rain and temperature. It's even hit 99% certainty in some cases. And so we applied this model to a sports formula. I am not a tremendous sports fan, but that, you know, the computer doesn't care about that. It can work out accuracy no matter what data we give it.
Okay, so if we were to play this out over a season, I'll get some results from you for the playoffs and how the Western and the Eastern Conference would have shaped up. But can you and have you done like the awards for the season? Have you finished up and done the awards too, or just playoff result models is what you're doing?
We were able to come up with a lot of, I think, quite accurate predictions for how the National Basketball Association season would have turned out. And yes, including some of the awards that you mentioned.
All right. So let's do this then. Dr. Garva Yules with us on ESPN Radio. Who do you have as the MVP of the league, according to the Frontera computer, the fifth largest supercomputer in the world?
The computer gave us the answer of MVP as James Harden. Our model showed that he scores 60 points in three straight games during contests 73, 74 and 75, which I am told is a record of some sort.
The rookie of the year, according to Dr. Garva Yules in the Frontera supercomputer.
A young fellow named Ja Morant. Am I saying the name?
Yes, you are saying that correct. So far, this is pretty close to accurate, I think. How about coach of the year? Do you have a coach of the year?
Yes, the gentleman for the Orlando Magic, Steve Clifford, I believe his name is.
No logic, just the computer spitting out Steve Clifford, Orlando Magic.
Again, Dan, I can offer no insight as a sports fan. I'm simply telling you what the computer told us. In certain cases, we do have data on what this based it on, but not in this. We just had Steve Clifford quite definitively.
All right. Dr. Garva Yules is a professor of algorithmic modeling at the University of Texas, where the Frontera computer is located, and the Frontera computer is the fifth largest supercomputer in the world. Where do you want to start in terms of playoff results, according to the computer and Dr. Garva Yules?
Well, the first result we had is the Nuggets from Denver defeating the Portland Trail Blazers 4-1. We have Damian Lillard. Am I correct?
Yes, that's how you pronounce it.
He insults the president of the United States in a post-game interview, in all likelihood, after their game one victory, and he gets suspended for at least two games. And that is what cost them the series.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh there, but that the computer is predicting bad behavior from Damian Lillard that gets him suspended and is the reason that the Denver Nuggets advance in the first round.
The computer takes in a tremendous amount of information, both statistical, personal, and it will occasionally give us a result like that. It can be quite predictive of behavior as well as numerical.
Okay, well, this will be more fun then if indeed there's going to be a lot of behavior attached to these. What other results do you have in front of you?
I have data in a series between the Grizzlies and the Lakers.
Okay, so the Grizzlies, you have Grizzlies and Portland making the playoffs. I don't know how that happened exactly, but okay. The Grizzlies and the Lakers, what happened in that?
We have the Grizzlies defeating the Lakers, which I believe would be classified as an upset.
Yeah, yes, it would be fairly shocking.
A low probability definitive event, what we call it, registers in game two when a player named Anthony Davis suffers quite a serious eye injury. And another player named I'm going to have trouble pronouncing this, Jonas what you just said. He hits Mr. Davis with an elbow, and Davis's eye actually detaches during game play, and the resulting trauma and loss of that skilled player costs the Lakers the series.
Oh, wow. Okay. A shocking result there from Dr. Garva Yules and the Frontera supercomputer. So who do you have winning the West then? If the Lakers are getting knocked out, who do you have winning out West?
We have the Rockets winning the West.
Wow. James Harden went crazy at the end of the season, and he won. So he wins the West. What happened out East?
The Celtics from Boston and the Milwaukee Bucks play a seven-game series. And each of those games is decided by a maximum of 5 points. A player named George Hill experiences an aberrational anomaly when he scores 51 points in the deciding game seven.
Wait a minute. You have George Hill scoring 51 points to decide a game seven between the Bucks and the Celtics.
Why is that humorous?
Well, he's not likely to score 51 points in a game. He's just sort of an ancillary player. It'd be the most surprising output of points in the history of the playoffs.
Well, we do have it as an aberrational anomaly. But you see, even if I knew a lot about basketball, which I don't, I defer to the computer. There is absolutely no bias.
So you have Milwaukee coming out of the East, and who do you have coming out of the West to face Milwaukee? I'm assuming that was game seven of the Eastern Conference Finals.
I want to mention that George Hill, after that 51-point game seven, in a subsequent press interview in the locker room, is caught in a statistical bloom, or what we call an exponential black swan event, when his towel falls off his body and he is apparently visibly aroused. And many in social media will comment that his unmentionable body part is not of sufficient size. And no game penalty is incurred there. But in the championship series, he is not the same statistical player. So I think it may affect him.
I don't understand how the computer would register such an event. I don't understand how the computer would know what George Hill's endowment was or what kind of shame he had about that endowment.
All this information is available to the computer. There must be, it culls everything, social media, comments, articles, some personal interactions. The computer is as close to all-knowing as you could possibly get. I would stand behind this this result.
Dr. Garva Yule's with us on ESPN Radio. What you have said, if it happened in an NBA game, just all of it, just basically everything you've said so far, would be somewhere between surprising and shocking as it relates to the results, not necessarily the awards. So what did you have happening in the final?
If I understand what you're referring to, the championship series in the NBA.
Yes.
Between the East and the West will be the Milwaukee Bucks and the Houston Rockets.
Okay, yes. According to the – that's not ridiculous. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Houston Rockets. It would be surprising if the Rockets got there, but go ahead. Explain to us what happens there.
Well, the Bucks are forced to play their home games at Marquette University because of water damage to their arena. And again, the modeling can be this specific, I assure you. And the Rockets' defense proves to be very formidable. And a player on the Bucks named, and I'm going to need help here, Giannis
Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo is held to 17 points a game by Daniel House. And in celebration of this, James Harden shaves his beard. And I don't know what this exactly means, but a player named Russell Westbrook wears an outfit to the celebratory parade that will consist of a pony and a sparkler.
A pony and a sparkler?
That's what we have Russell Westbrook wearing to the parade.
You've got a nude Russell Westbrook. He's nude? He's on a pony and he's holding a sparkler?
It doesn't say specifically that he is nude.
Who did you have holding Antetokounmpo to 17 points a game?
A player named Daniel House. Is he not a player?
Like a secret weapon or something? I don't know who that Daniel House is.
Well, I Mr. Levitard, I don't know who most of these players are. I'm just telling you what the computer is telling me.
Okay, so Daniel House shut down Antetokounmpo, and what? Houston wins the finals?
Yes, yes. And all the speeches at the celebration are delivered in Mandarin and English.
Okay. okay, that's excellent. So a little bit of politics there because what? Yeah, because the Houston Rockets are in bed with China? Is that the reason that the speeches were delivered in Mandarin? How the hell would the computer know that?
I would ask you this question. Listen, much of this I raised my eyebrows at, but much of professional sports – I respond that way too. That's not common practice.
No, but neither is Daniel House shutting down Antetokounmpo in a way that makes zero sense. Honestly, what else do you have for us in terms of results? Is that it, or do you have something else that we need?
That's as much as we came up with. We had many other results, but all of them fell below about 68% likelihood. So we don't even. That's about the cutoff point. Anything below that, we don't have enough faith.
Well, just so you know, again, Dr. Garva Yule's with us on ESPN Radio, the Frontera computer, fifth largest supercomputer in the world. Just so you know, the audience is going to think your computer and this is quackery because these results are too out of the norm. They're not in any way what would have actually happened according to human beings who have thoughts.
Listen, I'm used to this kind of thing, but all I can do is assure you that this is extremely accurate. And I've lost count of how many times I've heard that kind of thing from government leaders, from scientists, from sociologists who doubt what we've come up with, we are very rarely wrong. It's almost a curse to know this kind of stuff and to be, I'm used to being looked at that way, as a quack, as you put it. But, you know, it's like playing Mozart for a bunch of feral cats sometimes at an abandoned cannery. I mean, this is highly accurate, and human beings are highly irrational.
Okay, Dr. Garva Yule's then with us. We thank you for the time. I do feel like, and I don't mean to insult you or your computer, I do feel like we've wasted America's time with this segment, but I appreciate that you gave us that time to waste, Dr. Yule.
Well, I was asked to come on. I'm sorry you feel that way.
I'm sorry. I just know our audience is going to, I hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. That was probably rude.
And my feelings aren't hurt. I understand this can be very shocking, these results. I don't have a context for the sports, how shocking they might seem to a sports expert. We did our best with this, and these results were pretty, even by our standards, pretty definitive.
Okay, then. Thank you, Dr. Yules. We do appreciate the time, and we appreciate you allowing us to use your computer for such stupidity. Thank you for being on with us, sir.
Well, thank you, Dan, I suppose. Thank you. And I hope you're healthy and well in this difficult and trying times we find ourselves in.
I probably should have asked you how you were doing at some point during this interview, but I got right to the Daniel House information. Thank you for being on with us, sir.
Thank you, Dan.
Kind of sounded like Dan might have insulted Dr. Garva Yule there from the University of Texas. Certainly not this podcast's intention. We really enjoyed our time with him. A cool treat for the listener to let them know what might have happened in the NBA had there not been a suspension of play due to the pandemic. So we thank Dr. Garva Yule for his time. Coming up in just a moment, we will have Greg and Chris Cody interviewing Tim and Jeff Kirkchin. That's right, a father and son interviewing father and son, having a general chat about baseball. Cool stuff. Like the idea. That's coming up your way in just one moment. But first, I would like to thank ZipRecruiter for standing by the Mystery Crate and still sponsoring it. Right now, we cannot be overwhelmed. We have to work to keep our loved ones safe and protect our communities. We have to work to stay strong, to stay connected, to stay focused. We have to work to inspire, to innovate, to build new solutions. But for all this work, we have to work together. At ZipRecruiter, they connect employers to people every day. And today is different. That's why ZipRecruiter is partnering with first responders, government officials, the medical community, the innovators, and the manufacturing, transportation, and food distribution industries to make sure they are finding the right people for the right jobs right now. Let's work together. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/work together.
You never know.
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 You never know. You never know.
You never know.
You never know. You never know.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for... Oh, your dad's in here, too. Look at this. We can hold on me and meet him. We got it. I was thinking with our old dads that this would take longer to get everybody in.
Look at that.
Look at this. Tim. What's up, Tim?
Hey, Chris, can you see me?
I can see the top of your head. There you go.
We could see you from the nose up a minute ago.
Now we got you.
I want to leave my nose out of this no matter what.
All right. This is very exciting. We are joined today by not just Tim Kirkchin. We are joined by his son, Jeff Kirkchin. We are joined by the Kirkchin men. Now, how many Kirkchin men are there in your family, Tim?
Well, I have two brothers, Andy and Matt, who are older brothers and way bigger than me, way smarter than me. They can fix stuff. They can do all sorts of things. So I'm the smallest and the youngest one in the family in every way. So those are the boys. And all three boys, Andy, Matt, and Tim, had two children each, one boy each. So Jeffrey has male and female cousins, but that's kind of the lineage of the Kirkchin boys.
And Jeff, for the people that don't know, you are a radio host in Las Vegas on a country station. Just tell us about, you know, what you're dealing with right now and your setup with all this.
Yeah, so I've been hosting Jeff and Amy in the Morning on 102.7 Coyote Country for about 2 years now. Did radio in Great Cleveland, Ohio before then. Got to be a morning show host the year they won the NBA Finals, which was like just absurd to be working in a city that won a championship and be a part of that in a certain way. It has been quite an experience being a part of music radio as opposed to, you know, sports talk like my dad has done for so many years in sports journalism. But, you know, they're two in the same. It's all about telling stories. And even with all that's been going on, I mean, with this podcast and so many other ways to reach people, our radio station, I think, is just as important now than it ever has been before. And I like to think our company feels that way too. And we're hoping to stay as normal as this is right now for as long as we can.
Tim, I want to dive into baseball a little bit with you because I've been really enjoying the Tim Kirchen baseball fix, these daily facts you have and everything, and your love of box scores. I want to start with that because, you know, I was the entire Impossible Dream season, the Red Sox 1967. That was when I fell in love with baseball, and I, too, clipped out every Red Sox box score from that entire season. My obsession was sort of based in my love of statistics. You know, I was never great in math, but I knew 3 for 13 meant you were hitting 231. You know, I'm wondering, what was the origin of your love or even obsession with box scores?
Well, first off, you were cutting them out when you were 10 years old. I was cutting them out when I was 40 years old. There's a really big difference there. Okay. And look, Jeff will tell you, I grew up in a baseball house. This is the only language we spoke in my house growing up. My dad was a really good player, and he had a great feel for the game. My two brothers, who I mentioned, they're in the Baseball Hall of Fame at Catholic University. They were great college players. And my dad was a PhD in mathematics with all practical application to baseball. So I grew up reading the box scores every day. I was always looking for something in there. I was always curious. So when I went to Sports Illustrated in 1990, I'm now a national baseball guy instead of just a beat guy for one team. So I figured the best way to try to stay up on everything is to cut out every box score. So I actually counted up how much time it took me every day for a 20-year period, and I determined that it cost me 40 days of my life cutting out the box scores only. And after about 15 years of it, I had piled them all up into my closet where all my clothes were, and the weight of the box scores collapsed my closet, and I came home from a road trip, and all my suits are like on the ground covered in plaster, and I have to get them all replaced. And believe me, it's not very easy to get 38 shorts on the rack. So that's where it came from, but it was out of my love for the game as a kid, and then out of my necessity to understand what all 30 teams are doing, and the best way to do that was to look at the box scores every day.
What made you stop in 2010?
One night, see, I never missed a day in 20 years. Not one day did I forget to do it. One night, it's 11:45, literally 11:45 at night, and I realized, oh, my God, I didn't do my box score book. So I got up out of bed. My wife looked at me like she knew where I was going, and I went and did my box score book, and I came back, and the look on her face was, how could I have married such an unfathomable geek? And I think that was kind of the start of, all right, maybe this has run its course.
That's funny because I have the same kind of memories with my dad because my dad was obsessed with stats. He kept in when I played Little League and high school baseball, I have still binders of like every at bat I ever had. And at the time, I kind of made fun of it. Not made fun of it, but I would just be like, wow, this is crazy. But now I look back at it and it makes me emotional thinking about it because he cared so much about that. And I could tell his obsession with stats. So it's one of those things that as we get older, you appreciate it. And it has, it's made me, you know, realize like, wow, he really loves stats that much. So it's funny that our dads are weird, Jeff. We have, but they're lovingly weird. So that is a good combination, Jim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
Jeff was a very good athlete. He still is. But his sister, Kelly, was like the star basketball player, especially her senior year in high school. So when her senior year was over, I made a tape for her of her best highlights from the season. And since I was so interested in what she was doing, like your dad was with you, I would say, all right, remember the great move she made against Wooten? Remember the three she made against Whitman, the two free throws against Gaithersburg? And I put that all in a tape that runs like 4 minutes long. And I gave it to her one day and said, look, this is just something I put together for you with some help, of course. But I remembered all the great plays because that's the kind of thing that I was able to do.
That is great.
I want to add with my sister playing basketball, because my dad took on the job as the shot clock operator for the women's basketball games.
Very important.
Because he knew he was going to be there anyway and kind of got roped into doing it. And so, yeah, of course. So he's got the shot clock. This isn't the big scoreboard. This is just the shot clock. So all you have to do is see if the ball hit the rim, watch the referee, and then reset the shot clock and start and stop. But he was so into watching my sister play that the scoreboard operator next to him, who is a family friend of ours, would have to constantly hit him to say, shot clock, Tim, shot clock. She had one tiny little job. She's running all the operations, game clock, score, timeouts, fouls. He has one job, but he kept getting distracted. And I mean, as a dad, you would understand that it's hard. You don't want to talk to anybody during a game when your son or daughter's.
Oh man, that is so, you guys are making me think of so many memories, like just talking about that. Like I used to umpire baseball, and my dad he was so obsessed with everything I did that he would come and watch me umpire. And I'm wondering if that ever, like, you know, did you umpire, Jeff, or did you like do other things that your dad would come watch you do?
Yeah, I was a little league umpire.
Yes.
And I wanted to say I started when I was 16. That sounds about right. And I was doing pretty competitive travel ball. You know, I wasn't doing the rec league with the pad. I got thrown right into the mix. And I remember I did quite a few games as a base umpire until they had me put the gear on and go behind the plate. Ooh. And my dad actually came to one of my first ever games. And I actually got heckled by a fan.
Yeah, I need to pick it up from here because I'm still pissed off about this. It's the first game he's ever done. I go to watch him play. There's a runner on first base only. There's a pop-up to the second baseman. And this idiot in the crowd screams, infield fly rule! Infield fly rule! So I turn around to look at this guy, and I'm not the confrontational type. And he recognizes me. And he goes, oh, you're the baseball guy. He goes, that's an infield fly rule. I said, no, it's not. And that's my son, umpire. You owe him an apology.
Did he get the apology?
He said something to him after the game. He heckled my son about something he didn't even know about.
Oh, that is so good. I can't believe we both had dads, Jeff, that watched us umpire. And Tim was, that's really funny.
Yeah, I got heckled quite a bit. I wish dad was there more often. Let's just put it that way.
Tim, I want to circle back around to those box scores for just a minute. I'm wondering, whatever became of all the books containing 20 years of box score gold, you still have them?
I probably have 6 or 7 of those books because I don't want my closet to collapse again. My brother's already rebuilt it once. I can't make him do it twice. The reason I don't keep them all is I'm not a collector. I'm not a hoarder. I can't do that. Plus, I can get all the box scores on the internet now, and I know how to do it. What was helpful was when I would take a cross-country flight, and there is no internet, I had my box score book in a hard copy there. So I could look through box scores for literally 5 hours at a time, and I did that occasionally. But once the season's over, they're not as valuable because I can go back and look on the internet for that game. So, yes, there are a few of them. They're right up in my closet right there. I just used one of them in a video the other day.
Was there a reason to why you kept certain ones and got rid of other ones?
Good question.
No, it was not important. I just had to trim the herd. So I got rid of a bunch of them because otherwise I would be just have too many things in my way. And I'm a very neat and tidy guy and I can't have that happen.
Jeff, everyone, it's kind of like famous on our show of Tim being the world's nicest man. Now, as his son, I would imagine you have experiences where you've seen maybe the other side. what are like examples of things that really set your dad off, or like examples of him just other than when a fan heckles you as the umpire, when we would see like an irate Tim Kirkchin?
People who shoot the ball and are terrible at basketball and call game and then airball. If you want to really make my dad upset, I mean, I think we're all competitors. We're all competitors on the court. And the only time, not the only time, but one time I was the cause of my dad being very angry was I was home from college after my freshman year, and we were playing pickup basketball. It was dads against sons, kind of. It was kind of like an old dog league, but all really good players. Like, this is not a slight on them at all. And I matched up with my dad because we're the only people who are under 5'6". So we're guarding each other, and my dad is lighting me up personally. So I finally get a chance. He's looking to the wing, and I steal it off of his dribble, run down the court, body him at the end, and finish at the hoop. And he was not happy. And some words were said on the court, not to me, but to himself about himself. Because he was so upset, and then he went on to score 8 of his team's last 9 points, beating us by, you know, it was like 21-12. I mean, it was ridiculous. He was not going to let his son have the last word on that. Absolutely not.
I'm not sure I scored 8 of the last 9. That's hardly important. The important thing is, when you're 4'5", no one should ever take the ball off of your dribble. When you're this small, number one rule, nobody steals the ball from you because you're too small to have it stolen. I dropped an F-bomb that day right in front of Jeff. The only other time, and Jeff remembers this too, our dog, Peaches, what a great dog he was. He got into my closet and he ate my A2000. An A2000 is like the greatest baseball glove ever. It cost $150. I bought it when I was 42 years old. The most frivolous thing I've ever done in my life is buy a baseball glove when I'm 42. And then my wonderful dog ate my glove, and they heard the F-bomb resonate through the house. That was bad.
Well, and I think what makes that so important, and this is fitting for this podcast, is this was a glove that you bought with your dad and with my grandfather. And so this was kind of
that makes it so much worse.
Yeah. And the follow up to the best story ever was after the dog ate the glove, heartbreaking. I mean, that's your glove. And we felt so terrible that me and my sister, and we decided to go buy dad a new A2000 for Christmas. My mom did the same. My mom and I did it together. Dad went out and bought himself a new one. And my uncle, his brother, bought him one too. So we went from 0 A2000s to 3 A2000s.
Do you have all 3 now, Tim? Do we have all 3 gloves?
I still have mine. Jeffrey, I gave him one of mine because he was going to use the one that I was breaking in for him until my dog ate it. And then we sent one of them back to save the $150.
Right.
We couldn't justify 3 A2000s. That would be an A6000. And it was unnecessary.
Jeff, my dad is terrible with movie knowledge. We did a podcast bit a couple weeks ago where he didn't know the name Morpheus, like what movie that was from. It's very funny how terrible his movie knowledge is. And your dad is, of course, like a baseball knowledge god. What is something that your dad is terrible at? Like, what is the equivalent of the movie thing with my dad?
Well, I have to give my dad some credit because, you know, he mentioned how my older sister was a big basketball star in high school. And it's true. She's starting point guard, incredibly good. I mean, holds records still to this day in the county. And so when I started to kind of shift towards performing and musical theater, I started to realize my dad's knowledge with musical theater and music as a whole was not the best. I mean, I've been playing piano since I was 5 years old. It's something my dad had encouraged me since day one. And he was very supportive of me singing and performing and doing theater. And his dad, though, and he'll have a better recollection of this, wasn't the greatest singer on earth. He had no shame. He'd get up in the middle of a party and start singing to everybody if the power went out just to keep the party going. And
it's like my dad.
Yeah. So the great example is my dad would always, you know, pep talk us. Just like, you know, before you go out to a big game, Chris, your dad would say, hey, don't forget, keep your head down, head still. Don't chase the curveball. He would say that to my sister. Hey, Kel, you got to make sure you got to force your defender left if they're going right every time. You got to And then he'd come to me, and I've got a big show tonight, and it's Guys and Dolls, and I'm playing Nicely, Nicely Johnson. And he'd say, Jeff, go hit that high A tonight. We didn't really know what that meant, but I think I just mentioned one time hitting a high A was cool, and he just kept riding with that. So he was very supportive, and he, in a way, he understood how incredible it was what my sister was doing on the basketball court because he could understand
yes.
how difficult it is to make how many free throws in a row?
She made 54 out of 56 her senior year. She broke the school record for consecutive free throws twice.
Wow.
Year. It was 20. She made 32 and 21 in the same year. But, Jeff, your point is well made. Jeff played Oscar Madison in The Odd Couple. He comes home early one day from school, and he goes, I don't got my part. The show was on Friday, and he didn't have his lines. So I read lines with him for like 2 hours to make sure he had his lines. Because the guys, people in the show were starting to worry that Jeff, who's the star of the show again, doesn't have his part. So he comes home. We read a bunch of lines. He goes back the next day. He looks at the assembled kids on stage, and he goes, look, I got my part, okay? You take care of your part because I know what I'm doing now. So let's go. And to me, that was like the greatest Tom Brady pep talk. Just give me 3 seconds to throw the football and we're going to win here. Jeffrey went in there as Oscar Madison and said, I got this part. Let's go.
You know, it's funny because reading lines with you, Dad, you were reading the part of Felix Unger. And for anybody who knows Oscar and Felix, yeah. Oscar is the messy sports writer and Felix is kind of the, you know, cooker, yeah. clean, neat freak OCD. I think you're the combination of both of these characters here. The neat freak OCD sports writer. That's you. You're Felix and Oscar.
Right. But I've always been amazed how our kids ended up this way. Jeffrey is a great dancer. He can really sing. He is a really talented guy. I have zero of that talent. He can play the piano like nobody. It's fantastic. My daughter is like this award-winning artist. My mom used to hang my artwork on the inside of the refrigerator. I am the worst of all time. And both these kids are so much more talented than me. I once asked when they were like 7 and 5, I was really feeling insecure about myself as I do so often. And I said, well, just tell me something that Dad's good at. So the kids get together and they say, well, okay, you're good at basketball. You're good at writing. And then there's this tremendous pause and they say, you're good at feeding the dog. That was it. That's the third thing. Feeding the dog. Anyone can do that.
Oh my God. That is such a good line. Choose to hang your art inside of the refrigerator. Jeff, I'm thinking back when I was, I believe, 13 or 14, we took a California trip and my dad and I went away from my brother and my mom and we played Pebble Beach. I'm always going to remember that. What's like, just like a cool, like when I say to you, heartfelt, cool moment you've experienced with your dad, like what's the first thing that pops into your head?
I think that if we weren't on Zoom and on delay, I think we would say the same answer at the same time. And it was Cooperstown weekend, Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken's induction year. I mean, we rarely took, it's just the four of us, mom, dad, Jeff, and Kelly. And so we would always take trips together, which is obviously fine. But then the girls, you know, we used to go to Cooperstown, all four of us. Then the girls were like, okay, it's kind of the same thing every year. And I said, yeah. No, it's not. It's new Hall of Famers. It's so, yeah. So that was the first year that just dad and Jeff got to go. And it was unbelievable. I think the coolest moment was being a part of the induction after party, I guess is what it's called, and getting to talk to these players. And even though I was 12 years old, speaking to them as an adult and them being legitimately interested in what I was doing and what I'm interested in at that age, nobody ever talks to you like that. It's
yeah.
all, you're 12 years old. So cool. I was being treated as kind of dad's plus one as opposed to dad's kid over there. I mean, I had one moment with Cal Ripken, which my dad recalls a lot better than I would.
Yeah, well, Cal Ripken, in his induction speech, the lead to his induction speech was him telling about a time where he talked to like 200 kids. And he was explaining his career. You know, I played in 18 All-Star games and all. I went through this whole career he had to. And at the end of his little speech, the kid said, am I supposed to know who you are? Like, so Ripken makes his speech at Cooperstown, and it's fabulous as always, as was Tony Gwynn. And he met Jeff a couple times, but when it's all over, I'm going to go interview these two guys, and he sees Jeff again. And Jeff looks at Cal Ripken and says, am I supposed to know who you are? Like, and Cal Ripken like burst into laughter. Like, this kid is 11 years old. He actually listened to my speech. But the Cooperstown thing was really the start of it all for me, for Jeff. This is my takeaway from our trips to Cooperstown. I was doing Radio Row. I'm doing like six shows in like an hour. So my son is waiting for me, and a small New York station goes up to him and says, would you like to do an interview about what it's like to be a 10-year-old at Cooperstown? So he does 8 minutes at age 10. When he's done, the producer looks at me and goes, oh my God, I can't believe how good he is. And Jeffrey looks at me and goes, that's what I want to do. That's wow. What I want to do. And here it is, you know, 18 years later or 16 years later, and that's exactly what he's doing.
Well, I have a quick addendum that I have to add to Christopher's story about Pebble Beach the time we went there. When you're golfing at Pebble Beach, as you're walking up the 18th green toward the 18th fairway toward the green, a member of the Pebble Beach staff presents you with a beautiful bag medallion. You know, it's heavy, it's round, it's like an Olympic medal. It says Pebble Beach on it. It's like pretty nice. And Christopher turns to me and says, wow, Dad, look what they give you for free. it cost me $900 to play this round of golf. Not exactly for free.
All right, we don't want to keep you guys too much longer. This is so much fun. I'm having so much fun. Tim, I'm curious, you're still working, you're writing, as you said, you're doing the Baseball Fix, which is great. You guys, if you haven't seen, check it on Twitter. Tim's like every day he's doing a Baseball Fix. They're really interesting. They're really good. Have you gone down any rabbit holes of statistics during this quarantine?
You know, every day I look at this date in baseball history is kind of is an awakening for me, because I don't know who was born on May the 11th.
Right.
I don't know off the top of my head what happened on May the 17th. And it's really exciting for me just to get to a date and then start to recognize I can write about this. I have a story about this. That's the kind of stuff that really keeps me going in the morning, is I'm already through May the 22nd. I can't wait to look at May the 23rd to see what it might bring to me, a story that I can add to. If I can't add to any of this, then I have to find something I can do where I can add. But that's been the best part. As far as like doing anything else, like looking into the internet or trying something new on my computer, no, I will never do that. I can't find anything. I couldn't find Netflix with a map and a flashlight. And if it weren't for Jeffrey, I would never get through. He comes home, whenever I see him, he goes, Dad, you need any help with your cell phone? Because I can't do that because I'm 63. It's terrible.
So, Dad, I do have one question for you, because you use the word pathetic quite a bit to describe yourself, which I would disagree. I think, you know, all of your work has led to your success in your career. But with that being said, what would you say is the most pathetic thing you know when it comes to baseball? Meaning, you know who had the most times caught stealing in the 1971 season. What is the most pathetic thing, in your words, that you know?
I love this question.
Well, it's really unhealthy that I know the leading home run hitter for every letter in the alphabet.
Wow.
Really unhealthy that when I take a long trip and everyone is asleep in the car except for me, I run through in my head, A is Hank Aaron, B is Barry Bonds, C is Jose Canseco. And I do that just to sharpen it, just in case I stop for gas and some total stranger comes up to me and goes, oh, by the way, who has the most home runs for the letter Z? I mean, of course, that would never happen. But I did go to a party one night, and a guy who I don't even know just doesn't even say hello. This is how my life works. And he just says, 15 guys in Major League history have hit 40 homers in a season with four letters or less in their last name. That's how he introduced himself.
You love that, though. You love that.
I have to go disappear into a corner. I have to pretend like I'm talking to people when I'm really trying to get Norm Cash and George Bell and all these other ridiculous names out there. That's unfortunately the pathetic nature of my life.
Who's the leader in home runs all time for the letter L?
Carlos Lee, not Derek Lee. Carlos Lee is the all-time L. And a couple years ago, we had two changes in the same season. We had Ryan Zimmerman became the Z and Chase Utley became the U.
Wow.
And by the way, the H is Ryan Howard and Frank Howard with the exact same number, 380. Wow. What are the chances that two guys with the exact same last name would share that record?
Tim, please, please tell me that my boyhood hero, Carl Yastrzemski, is the leader of the Y's in home runs.
Yes, he's got the most home runs for the letter Y.
Thank God.
What? By the way, Edwin Encarnacion at the moment is at 414. Darrell Evans is at 414. So Edwin Encarnacion, next homer, he will be the new E leader, and I will be all over that. And that being pathetic.
Tim, Yaz is my dad's by far favorite player of all time. Can you just badmouth Yaz for me? Say he was a little overrated.
No, he was not overrated. I believe he's the greatest defensive left fielder of all time. But you asked this. I'm told, I don't know this for sure, that a lot of people bought Yaz breakfast, and he didn't buy as much as everyone bought breakfast for him, all right? So that's the worst thing I can say about Carl Yastrzemski is when it came time to pick up the check, somebody else picked it up. But I love Yaz. He was a great player. So old, I covered baseball when he was still playing.
Dad, is that why you love him so much? Because you're very, like, around our studio, you know, Dan and Stu Gatz, big, big lunch buyers. Greg Cody, not a huge lunch buyer.
Oh, first of all, I never knew that about Yaz. You know, Tim is denigrating my entire childhood by
bringing me up. I love Yaz.
Guys, this was so much fun. The Kirkchin guys, we got to do this again. Tim, Jeff, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Greg. And thank you, Jeff. This was a blast. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
That's almost going to do it for us here on the Mystery Crate. But before you go, you didn't really think you could listen to an ESPN podcast and not hear about The Last Dance, right? I mean, we got to promote it. It's huge. I don't know if you've seen the ratings. And part of it is because of promos like this. So we're not just going to stop because the first two episodes were well received. No, we're going to step on the gas and our coverage of The Last Dance. Even though we didn't really cover The Last Dance in this episode, we talked to Dr. Garva Yules and Jeff and Tim Kirkchin. But I guess this is coverage, right? Just mentioning it? Either way. Our coverage of The Last Dance is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Coverage is brought to you by AT&T.